Three.
Hey, everybody. I'm Andrew Mellon. I'm the Wall Street Journal bestselling author of Unstuff Your Life and The Most Organized Man in America's Guide to Moving. And the best advice I ever got was from my mentor, Herb White, who told me never go to any meeting without your business cards.
Never go to any meeting without your business cards. Andrew, that's awesome advice, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So now what do you do on these Zoom meetings? I mean, I didn't get your card. What are we doing here, man?
Well, you know, this isn't a meeting, but I'll tell you, I used to leave the house all the time without cards, and he would take me. This is when I was running DCAC, the District of Columbia Arts Center in Washington. And he would take me to these parties and these events, and he'd introduce me to all these muckety-mucks in Washington, D.C. in the art world. And he'd say, give me your card. And I'm like, fuck, I left the house without my card. And he just turned to me once. He said, never leave the house without your business cards. I'm taking you to all these places. This is an opportunity for you to make these connections. And it just, I mean, it landed on me in the way that made it super clear. Like, he only needed to tell me twice, actually.
Only twice. Good. So you're not that slow of a learner.
No. And I've always made sure that there were business cards in my wallet every day that I walk out of the house since then.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So cool. Well, I bet that served you well as you wrote this book, right? Because bring business cards is part about being prepared. And that's certainly one of the things that I really like about your book, about Unstuff Your Life, is one of the early parts you say is keys, wallet, purse, mail. And for you, obviously, you know, probably your business cards are inside wallet or inside phone, if you will. So talk to me about how that got started and why those are the key components for unstuffing your life.
Well, I think that everybody struggles with in a digital world in the 21st century, those are the fundamental tools that you need to have. I mean, we still have locks on our houses, even if you have a keypad, you might have a car, you're going to need keys. So you just want to know where those are. Likewise, your wallet, if it's got one credit card, your driver's license, some form of identification, you want to know where that is. If you male, female, non-binary, if you leave the house with a bag, you're going to want all the stuff in the bag that you need to carry around with you during the day. And your mobile phone, because that basically is the computer that's in your pocket today. So for me, that's the checklist of everything. Do I have everything? I'm ready to walk out the door. I have a home for all of those things so that when I first come home at the end of a day, I can unpack my pockets and everything goes where it's supposed to go and I know where it all is. And then likewise, as I'm walking out the door, it's easy to gather everything together and then head out. And I know that I'm prepared for whatever's going to happen during the day.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's simple stuff, but it's super powerful stuff. As I was reading through the book, I'm like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense. But you know, I get really attached, I think, sometimes to stuff.
Mm.
And yet your advice in the book is you are not your stuff. Talk to us about that, because I think that's a really interesting concept that I think a lot of people miss on.
Well, I think that certainly in developed countries and the Western world, Madison Avenue, some version of Madison Avenue, wherever you're living, has done an excellent job of brainwashing us into thinking that we are our things and that where we live, who we sleep with, where we send our kids to school, the cars that we drive, the clothes that we wear, the phone that we use, all of these things, our zip code, all of these things define us and give us value, give us self-worth. And that's a load of crap. It doesn't matter. None of those things matter. Your core values are what matter. And I think partly the world looks the way it does because we've completely bought into this idea that the exterior world is defining our experiences and by extension or forward, you know, forwardly in is defining ourselves for ourselves. And I just think it's ass backwards. We should be defining ourselves by our values and building a world that actually accurately reflects those values instead of living in this consumptive world that other people are defining for us. I just think if you have that experience of too much to do, too much stuff, not enough time, chances are you are living according to somebody else's rules and not your own.
Yeah, I think that's super important to remember, right? We lead with our values. We can see the world through our values first, which then allows us to define instead of others to define. So when did you come up with this, Andrew? I mean, when did this first strike you? And by that, I mean, right, because most of us, it's so freaking obvious once we hear it, but it's like not something that conks us upside the head. So what was your kind of, your flashpoint here?
I wish that there was like a white light moment that I could point to. I mean, it would make a great story. I started doing this where I worked in the theater for 20 years. I was a director. I was an actor. I was a producer. I ran several theaters. And when I got laid off from a theater in Seattle, Washington, I came back east, got a gig co-producing an award ceremony at the Kennedy Center. One of our awardees was a Nobel Peace Prize winner in New York, went to his office to get some photographs. In the time that I was in his office trying to pull everything together, things were a mess. And it took me several hours there. And by the time I was finished, his wife pulled me into their apartment and said, "So, you know, what's your story? Who are you? What's going on? Tell me who you are, because you're going through all of our things." And I told her, you know, this is who I am, and I'm moving back to New York, and I'm looking for theater work and blah, blah, blah. And she says, "Well, how would you like to organize our photographs for us?" And I said, "I would love to do that. It'd be a tremendous honor." So I started, we made a date for me to go to work. Long story short, I never went to work for them. But they rescheduled three times. The fourth time they said, "When we're ready to proceed, we'll get back in touch with you." But in those 4 months, I told every person I met, I got this amazing gig. I'm going to create a comprehensive photographic archive for a Nobel Peace Prize winner. And that led to a friend referring me to an accountant who needed a filing system. I built that for her. She started sending her clients to me. People would show up on my doorstep literally with a duffel bag full of receipts saying, "I haven't filed my taxes in 5 years. I've got letters in here from the IRS. I'm freaking out. I don't want to go to jail. Can you make sense out of all of this paperwork for me so I don't, you know, end up behind bars?" I would organize the paper for them. I'd put it in QuickBooks. I'd give it to the accountant. The accountant would file their taxes. These people were like, "Oh my God, you have saved my life. I don't know how you did it, but you worked magic." And they would tell all their friends. Their friends would say, "I need somebody just like that. How do I get a hold of this guy?" And that's how my business began. And what I did was just use all of the skills that I had developed in the arts, problem solving, collaboration, trying to find the most direct, meaningful route forward through whatever you're doing to get to where you want to be, with an eye to story, but really a focus on plot rather than narrative. And I developed that skill set. And through the process of doing that, that's how this business grew for me. So it was a very organic, unplanned journey. And so the epiphany, such as it is, was applying arty, crafty skills in the private sector, solving problems for people, and using, you know, my natural ability to be organized, my natural ability to solve problems rapidly, and in using those skills, those abilities, this started like, so how do I translate this to people who don't have my innate talent in this direction, right? They have other talents, but they don't have this talent of solving problems, or they have a blind spot because it's hyper personal to them and they have no objectivity. And you have all the objectivity because you don't have a horse in the race. So you can look at how they're doing what they're doing and say, "Yeah, you got seven steps in here that are completely, you know, mucking up the works and don't need to be there. What if you removed these seven steps, closed up the sequence? Wouldn't that be faster and more efficient?" So it's bringing, you know, and again, I will give credit to my professors at college, because that was the first place that I was taught to think critically. You know, in school, in high school, elementary school, I was somewhat bright. I'm somewhat articulate. So it was relatively easy to do well on tests without really applying myself. And the whole goal, as it was explained to me, and I like to win, was memorize this stuff, regurgitate it on a test, get a high score, and then you can forget it. It doesn't really matter, right? It was when I got to college that it seemed that the information they were sharing with me actually needed to be retained, and you needed to be able to navigate through a text and through a lecture or a series of lectures and discern what was important to you, synthesize it, turn it into something, and hold on to it. And so that was the beginning of learning how to analyze things and to bring some critical attention to what you're learning. And so I've had many, many years of developing that skill. And so that's how I came up with the book, and that's how I cooked it, was trying to solve problems for other people. You know, who was I writing to? Who was I trying to communicate with? And giving them as many shortcuts and the benefit of what I've discovered and learned over these years to so that they didn't have to spend as much time trying to figure it out. They could just employ it.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And you mentioned photos, and then you mentioned taxes, and you, in your book, you talk about email. So which are they all the same? Are they all different? You want to pick, let's pick one of them, Andrew, and talk about how we might get organized with that. Because I know in the book, Unstuff Your Life, you go into great depth on this. So give us an overview, pick one, and let's go down that path. And maybe I'll interject some questions as I have them.
Sure. Well, first, let's start with the organizational triangle, because that's the foundation of the book. And those are the three universal rules. And once you learn these, and they are literally so simple that I've taught them to 4-year-olds, so they're not going to stump anybody. But the organizational triangle is one home for everything, like with like, and something in, something out. I'll do this one more time for you, right? One home for everything, like with like, something in, something out. The first two, one home for everything and like with like, are what we use to get organized. Something in, something out is how we stay organized. So there's three rules. That's all you need to remember. One home for everything means everything has one home, only one home. Your keys have a home, my keys have a home. Doesn't have to be the same home. Where you keep your keys can be different from where I keep my keys, but your keys have a home, my keys have a home. They can only ever be one of two places, in your hand unlocking something or in their home. You will find anything in 30 seconds or less if you apply this rule. Like with like means all like objects live together, not most of them. That's what typically trips people up, is they squirrel things around in multiple places. So if you put all like objects together, all of the tools in the toolbox, all of the office supplies in the office supply closet or the drawer, all of the cooking utensils with the cooking utensils, all of your linens with your linens, all of your cosmetics with your cosmetics, you start to see like, oh, this is the actual volume of things that I'm trying to house. I don't have enough space for all of these things. Or you're in that moment, you have two choices. Either you need less stuff or you need more space. It becomes very clear. And again, that's how you get organized. One home for everything, like with like. The way you stay organized is once everything has a home and all of its like siblings are together, you are organized. You can stay that way by whenever you bring something new in, you let something go. It's super easy. You're not augmenting. And again, if you live in that story, that narrative story of too much stuff, not enough time, why are you accumulating more things? If you have enough pencils, why are you buying more pencils? Just because they're so cheap, they were practically giving them away. They weren't giving them away. You did buy, you spent some money for them. So that's just one of your 200 lies that you're telling yourself every day is, you know, they were practically giving them away. Well, they weren't giving them away, so you could have left them at the store, right? Because now you have more pencils and you have to find a place for those to join all of their other sibling pencils. So when we think about email or photos or, you know, office supplies, any of them, when it comes to emails, I have five suggestions for you and for the listeners, the viewers. The first one is only read your email when you have time to answer it and reply to it. And I will break that down for you. At best, you're wasting the time reading it because you're going to have to reread it when you go to answer it, right? So that's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is that you're reading the email. Now you're upset by what you've read. You can't concentrate on what you need to be doing. You're composing the snarky response in your head, or you're even going so far off the tangent that you're forwarding it to somebody saying,
read this. Can you believe I just got this in my inbox? I am so pissed right now, right? And none of that had anything to do with what you thought you were going to be doing. So that's the number one tip that I would share with you is only read email when you have time to answer it, to read it and answer it. The second tip would be do not read your email constantly throughout the day unless your job is a customer service job where you must constantly be responding to emails because that is your job. But for the rest of us who that isn't your job, first of all, email is not brain surgery. Nobody's bleeding out on the table. So if it takes 2 hours or 4 hours or 6 hours for you to respond to somebody, that should be fine. They ought to know if you have any sort of relationship with them, your preferred means of communication. In my world, it would be text and phone. So if there's an urgent need to get a hold of me, email would be the worst way for you to send an email. There are so many opportunities for that to get caught in a spam filter or for it to not get through any number of servers. You would never rely on email for urgent, important communication. Pick up the phone, send a text, do something where you know that there's very few obstacles or potential roadblocks for that communication to arrive where you want it to arrive in a timely way. The third thing I would say is automate using rules or filters for your inbox so that you can pre-sort emails according to subject, according to keyword, according to domain, specific email address. There are plenty of ways that you can configure these rules or filters, and they do the same thing. In a Mac world, they call them rules. And sometimes I think in Outlook, they call them rules. In some other web-based programs like Gmail, they might call them filters. They are basically the same thing. And a quick Google search for configuring rules or filters for whatever email application you're using will give you enough of a tutorial that you'll be able to set those up. And that will clean out so many of the dead emails that don't belong in your inbox. Another tip I will share with you is that if the message is less than 15 words long, you could actually make the subject line the message. So you no longer have to read the email because the subject is the email, and you can terminate it with an EOM for end of message. The first time that you use this protocol with somebody new, like we use it in my office all the time, so I don't have to explain it to anybody, but I would say open a parenthesis, spell out end of message, uppercase EOM, so that they understand what EOM stands for when you use it going forward, close the parenthesis. And now, so instead of saying to Phil, right, I could say, meet you at the Starbucks Northeast Corner, 27th and 3rd, 4 p.m. Thursday, EOM. That saves us all of the time of me having to say, hi, Phil, whatever, we're friends. I don't need a salutation every time I write to you. Hi, Phil, comma, so looking forward to seeing you. Let's meet at the Northeast Corner of 27th and 3rd at the Starbucks there at 4 p.m., period. Looking forward to it, Andrew. And then you write back, great, we'll see you there. And then I write back, awesome, so looking forward to it. And then you write back to me, me too. And I write back to you, can't wait. I got such good information. I can't wait to share it with you. And you write back, oh my God, I'm on fire. Tell me now. And I write back, no, you have to wait until, you know, all of this is wasted time. None of that would have needed to happen if all I needed to send you was the coordinates and we would have that conversation when we meet. And the last tip that I will share with you around email is going back to what I'd said before, which is make sure that the people you're communicating with know your preferred means of communication. I make it super clear. I hate email. Email is the worst way to communicate with me. And I do not accept outside invitations to my calendar. So do not send me those thinking that I'm going to accept them, because then I have to send my assistant. Actually, I have to send back an email to you saying, we don't accept outside invitations. Do not be surprised when we reject this invitation. It doesn't mean anything. Again, it's all wasted time. You think that you're doing something to speak up the communication and the connection between us, but in fact, you're actually complicating things.
Wow. So let me break the last one down first, because holy crap, that's a lot of good stuff there. Okay. So
yeah,
the calendar thing.
Yes.
Outside appointments. So talk to me a little bit about that in the days where a lot of people sent calendar link out. Hey, pick this up, use this. I mean, how does that work, man?
Yeah. So I run my own calendar. what often happens, because again, people aren't thinking all the way through, they'll typically send me an invitation saying, meeting with Andrew Mellon, 2 p.m. Thursday. What does that mean? I am me. I'm not meeting with me, and I can't edit it. It's your appointment. So my only choice is accept it or reject it. But I want to actually edit it to say, AM plus Phil Gerbershek, colon, podcast recording. That's what I want to see in my calendar. I don't want to see, you know, meeting with Andrew Mellon. That means nothing to me. So, and instead of trying to control your behavior around my particular lexicon and how I like things to show up in my calendar, it's just better for me and my assistant. She runs my calendar. I just say, Kelly, just put it on my calendar, get all the important information, whatever Zoom link or, you know, StreamYard link that we need, put it all in there, conference call, any of that information, ideally a cell phone number in case all of the other means of communicating fall apart in the last minute, put it in the appointment for me and put it on my calendar and, you know, set two reminders, one for 30 minutes and one for 15 minutes. And then I have an appointment that actually matters to me and makes sense to me when I see it in my calendar.
Awesome. Awesome. I dig that. That makes a lot of sense on that. So,
well, because the other choice is just to to kind of get into your business and tell you, this is how I want you to send me a link. So yeah. That's like, I mean, that just feels a little like a little bossy and pushy. So I'd rather you do what you want to do. Just you make your own appointment. I'll make my own. I'm an adult. I'm the most organized man in America. Chances are I can show up for an appointment that I agreed to show up for. I don't need you to send me a reminder.
You're funny, man. That's yeah. Good. So that one, and then the do not read your email constantly throughout the day, unless that's your job, and make sure that you have the time to read it. I have to say, this one is the one that I need the most work on. So how do you get disciplined to actually do this, Andrew? I mean, is there, you know, do you have like some rewards punishment system? Is it just electroshock? I mean, what's good? How does this work, man?
I closed the email program. It's not open. If it's not open and I'm not getting notifications, I don't know that there's email, right? It doesn't matter. It's not. The only exception to that is when I'm traveling, because I have, you know, and I hate this expression, time to kill, because, you know, nobody has enough time to be murdering it. So I don't have time to kill, but I'm at an airport, I'm in a lounge and I'm waiting to board a plane. So I will check my email along with the other things that I'm doing, because sometimes there's not great Wi-Fi or I can't be tasking on something of greater importance to me. So I will, if you will, cheat in those moments and scan on my phone to see if there's any emails that came in other than the three appointments that I have set with myself during the day to check email. So, you know, at those three times, I open up my email program, I scan through it, I look to see if there's anything that I need to respond to. And when I'm finished with that, I close it and put it away. It's like, it's not important to me. There's nothing that's coming in that is critical. And again, even on my website, and my assistant knows this. So like if the media is reaching out to me, which they do often to get me to, you know, we're on deadline. They're always on a deadline, right? Nobody ever reaches out from the media with long lead times. Like, hey, we're working on this article. We've got 3 weeks for you to get back to us. It's always like, hey, I've got a deadline. It's at 5 p.m. today. Can I get a quote from you on blah, blah, blah. So those, you know, my assistant knows when she sees something like that to call me or text me to get my attention. On the website, it says that on the contact page, you know, if you are the media and you are on deadline, call me. Here's my mobile number, so that they know, and hopefully they're smart enough to do what I've suggested that they do and not just send me the, you know, the sad email. Hey, if you have a minute, right? So what's my point? My point is I make it clear how to reach me and I just put the email program away. It doesn't require a lot of Pavlovian motivation. It's just, I hate email. There's almost anything I would rather do than answer an email.
You say that all right. It is so simple and yet it's hard, but it is something that you can condition yourself on.
Totally.
And, yeah. And if you hate
close the program.
Yeah. Just close the program, close the tab. And the other part no notifications.
Oh, yes.
Let's be clear, right? Notification, in my estimation, the only thing that notify me right now is fantasy football because the draft, right? That's the only reason that does. Throughout the season, it'll do some of that, right? It's at least on waivers day. Text message, messenger, and the actual phone will get to me. Oh, and Slack, because that's how my business partner and I are talking. But that's it. There's nothing else that gets through. And I think it's really interesting that once people get, oh, this is how to communicate with you, they're happy to do it. I think people are just looking for the least amount of friction to actually communicate with us. They're not looking to make our life more difficult. If I say, you say, call me, well, I'll call you. I don't want to interrupt. But if you say, I hate email, why would I, unless I'm sending you the link to today's show, why would I ever email you, right? That's just ridiculous. If I want to talk to you, hi, Andrew, what's up, man? Really simple.
Yeah, you'll end up in voicemail. I mean, worst case scenario is I couldn't pick up, in which case I will send you back a text reply saying I'm on a call. I'll get back to you ASAP. Yep. Or if I don't see the phone, you'll just end up in voicemail and I'll return the phone call. So yeah, you're exactly right. It's this idea, again, whoever built these apps built them with the lowest common denominator in mind, not the most sophisticated user, but they tried to make it as dumbed down and applicable for the most people possible. And if they were smart, they gave us the option to customize the app so that it serves us in the particular peculiar ways we want to use technology. So we can suppress notifications for most apps. You know, if you can't suppress them, it's not an app that I want on my phone or on my computer. And again, I don't need to be beeped and chirped at by some program says this is important. Not to me, it's not. I'm writing a article, or I'm writing an email that I'm going to send, you know, like a marketing email. I'm writing a chapter to a book. I'm doing something. That's far more important to me than so-and-so, you know, is trying to sell you something or wants to get your attention in some way. It's not important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's great advice here as we wrap up, is decide what's important to you and have the system work for you, right? Actually design that system so that it works for you. So if there was something else, Andrew, that people should use to get started, of course, they should absolutely get a copy of the book, right? Stuff Your Life is a fantastic book. I'll tell you, it's not a fast read, but it's a simple read. No, hold on. No, I mean that, right? So it's something, because you have to do the work. Let me be clear, right? You have to set up the system. It's not a fast read. That's good though. It's simple. It's not like you use big words here. I mean, don't read your email unless you have time to read and reply. But then you explain that, and I dig that, and I think that's important, right? And I share that because, you know, don't get intimidated, folks, by the girth of this book, right? Just know, pick a spot and get started. But Andrew, if people were going to get started even more, where would they do that? I'm going to give you the last words here for a couple last insights.
Sure. Well, I mean, you can certainly, you know, you'll find a lot of free content at my YouTube channel, you know, at Andrew Mellon on YouTube. Just search for me, M-E-L-L-E-N, right? At the website, andrewmellon.com. I would say if there's a way, Phil, that we can make the core values worksheet available to folks, I'd be happy to share that with you.
Sure.
You could post it, because that's really the place that I would say start, is set a timer for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, do the core value exercises. And that's really going to inform so many of the choices that you make after that. Once you know what is important to you, it becomes so much easier to decide what isn't important to you. And I'll leave you, this is how I communicate it to other folks when I'm teaching, is if the house isn't literally on fire, when urgent and important are completely in sync, right? The way to distinguish urgent from important is urgent is typically somebody else's agenda. Important is our own. So that's the easy way to distinguish it, right? I mean, if you don't need to be on the volunteer fire department running around putting out everybody else's fires just because they're yelling and screaming about it. They set the fire. They can put out the fire. You can remember what's important to you and hold fast to that and not get distracted by all of the other things that are happening. Because right now, in this exact moment, there are any number of things that are happening. This is that whole FOMO thing, right? There's a soccer game happening someplace in South America. There's a sale on at some department store. There is a concert. There's a wedding. There's a bar mitzvah. There's a funeral. Something is happening and we're not attending any of them, and the quality of our life is not being negatively impacted because all of those things are happening and we aren't participating in them because we've already chosen what was important to us, and that's what we're spending our time doing. So to be able to sit really comfortably in that knowledge and be in your body and in yourself and in this moment right now is the best place to begin, because everything else is just, it's just busyness. And, you know, I wish that I could take credit for this, but Warren Buffett said it, busy is the new stupid. And I, you know, I totally agree. We're all running around like chickens with our heads cut off for serving somebody else. They're not serving ourselves. And as a result, because we don't know when this experience ends, we might end up at the end of it and go, shit, I want a do-over, man. This was not how I expected everything to play out. Like, if you would have told me that this is where we were going to get to, I would have made a much different choice about 20 or 30 miles back on the road. I don't want that to happen for anybody, right? This moment, you have agency to change what you're focusing on and how you're spending your time. So don't waste that and then look backwards and say, no. Let's go back, because you can't go back, right? You can bank money, you can't bank time.
There you go. Yeah. Busy is the new stupid, and you can't bank time. Great insight, Andrew. I love that. I appreciate that. There's so much goodness that you shared today. My gosh, man, you give me like, holy cow, here we go. So really cool. So Andrew, folks should absolutely go to andrewmellon.com. That's M-E-L-L-E-N, andrewmellon.com. Get a copy of Unstuff Your Life. Like I mentioned, it is dense, but it is simple. You can do it. Andrew shared a lot of great stuff. Andrew, I really appreciate your time today, man. Thanks so much for sharing so much goodness.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Good stuff. Take good care.